Good morning. This is KDNK coming up on 7:41. It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Thursday morning, September 22nd. I'm Steve Cole, live in our Carbondale studios with News Director Gavin Dahl. Good morning again, Gavin.
Good morning, Steve. Colorado voters will get their say in how the next election is handled thanks to two questions that will appear on this November ballot. One would open local primaries to unaffiliated voters. The other would switch the state to a presidential primary instead of a caucus. Benta Berklin reports.
A wave of excitement around the presidential race back in March didn't translate to a smoothly run caucus in Colorado. In fact, members of both parties had major concerns.
We saw a lot of dissatisfaction, not just in metro Denver area, but around the state.
That's Democratic State Party Chairman Rick Palacio.
People had to travel long distances, wait in long lines. It would be better for Colorado to move towards a presidential primary so that every registered voter received a ballot in the mail, not just had to show up on one random Tuesday.
Palacio says the caucus system ended up disenfranchising many groups, including the elderly and people with young children. It can also be confusing and inconvenient. That's why he and his Republican counterpart wanted state lawmakers to pass a bill to add a presidential primary. That didn't happen, and neither backs Initiative 140, which would add the primary and go one step further by opening it up to unaffiliated voters. Here's Republican State Party Chairman Steve House.
Because what's the point of having a private membership organization that allows non-members to vote? You basically said, all right, I've got a board, but anybody who happens to show up off the street that day, they can vote. I don't like that. I think that's the wrong idea.
But some high-level officials, such as Democratic Governor John Hickenlooper, back the idea of having open primaries.
That's going to certainly encourage many, many more people to get involved in the electoral process. Right? More and more people become unaffiliated voters through one frustration or another with the traditional party politics. Doesn't mean that we should look for ways for them to be involved in who actually ends up on the ballot.
Kent Theory agrees. He's the CEO of the Denver-based kidney care company DaVita. He's also leading the Let Colorado Vote campaign.
We now have a world where there are more independents in Colorado than there are Democrats or Republicans. And the notion that a small fraction of each party picks the finalist and the rest of the people in the party and all the independents only get to choose between those two extreme candidates, that's just not healthy democracy.
The latest campaign finance reports show that supporters have raised roughly $1.5 million, while opponents have raised hardly anything. Colorado State University political science professor John Strayer is an unaffiliated voter. In the past, he says he's felt forced to register as a Republican because he lives in a right-leaning district where the primary vote is the one that counts.
In the majority of the districts, whether they're state legislative districts or congressional districts, the real decision is not made in November. The decision is made on primary day. If you live in those districts, which is most people in this country and in this state, the best way to have an impact is to vote in the primary election.
A separate initiative, number 98, is also focused on unaffiliated voters. It would open up the current local state house and U.S. Senate primaries, again, without a person having to pick a party.
I think all the details have to be worked out, and elections are actually a fairly complicated process.
Republican Secretary of State Wayne Williams supports a presidential primary, but not open primaries. That's because if passed, unaffiliated voters would receive a combined ballot in the mail that would include both the Republican and Democratic tickets, and they would select one. He says it would lead to lots of errors and would be logistically challenging.
Much of the existing election equipment is old and doesn't have the capability of tabulating ballots that have both parties, and you can only vote in one, and if you vote in both, then it's disqualified. And so it's a much more complicated programming issue that many of the counties, from what we've talked to them, don't have the capability to actually run, and so that would then drive up cost.
Other grassroots opponents say the caucus system needs to be preserved in its current state. It is worth noting that neither proposal would do away with the caucus system entirely, which Democratic Party Chair Rick Palacio says is a good thing.
We want to make sure that caucuses remain intact for the purposes of party building, for community building around party issues.
Adding a presidential primary is estimated to cost counties and the state $5 million each presidential election cycle. I'm Benta Berklin at the State Capitol.
Colorado rivers and streams are not just for municipal and agricultural use. How much water is needed to maintain fisheries or to keep the river ecosystem intact? Parts of the Crystal River almost run dry in late summer due to diversions for agriculture and Carbondale's ditches. So the town is working on raw water efficiency. KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh reports.
About 750,000 gallons of water run through Carbondale's ditch system every day, from April 15th when the ditch is turned on to October 15th when the ditch is turned off. It's diverted from the Crystal River by a series of headgates and ditches, and the town holds the water rights, says Town Utilities Director Marco Mira.
We've got strong water rights, or senior water rights. We've been able to utilize that for all of the irrigation on our major parcels of land. The Roaring Fork School District is using it. The town of Carbondale is using it up and down the highway corridor, all the parks for the most part.
Residents who live along the ditch can also use the water for gardens and lawns.
We've got a lot of people that have pumps in the ditches, and it's a free use at this point. They supply the pumps and the electric and all that to it. We try and keep a bird's eye view on what's being out there. We've got an inventory of most of the ditch users for residences and things like that.
The water flowing through the ditches augments municipal water, which comes from a different source, and it saves the town from building another water treatment plant.
We don't need to build the infrastructure for the additional storage that's needed in order for a lot of the irrigation use off of the treated water supply.
So this benefits the town and its residents, but what about the Crystal River itself? Right now, according to Aspen Journalism, there are 25 diversions along the river and its tributaries that take more than 400 cubic feet per second from the river system. Some of those diversions do not return water to the Crystal. Instead, that water goes to the Roaring Fork. And during irrigation season, portions of the lower Crystal pretty much run dry.
But the concern is the stream's too low in some of these areas right here. And you can tell just driving by RVR, you can see most of the rocks in the stream. It doesn't have an even flow this time of year.
That's Tim Melovic, Carbondale Utilities Supervisor, who works with OMERA during a recent tour of local water management projects hosted by the Colorado Foundation for Water Education.
That's in part because of the water the town uses, but that's really, in a sense, very, very, very small percentage of the river flow itself in that area.
This and other concerns about water use along the Crystal River prompted the Crystal River Management Plan, a collaboration of local and regional conservation groups and stakeholders. The plan was released in April 2016 with the goal of balancing agriculture, municipal, industrial, recreational, and ecological water use needs. For Carbondale, that means more efficient ditches. Again, Mark O'Meara.
We've incorporated some of the water efficiency measures on all the ditches. We're putting in culverts, which are not earthen. Whenever there's a disturbance on an earthen part of the ditch, we have it lined with bentonite. It's a clay mixture. And we're incorporating this measuring system within the town. We've got new pump stations that are coming off of the ditches, and we want to make sure that we get water to them.
The town is also working on quantifying the amount of water that flows through the ditches and mapping where it goes and how it's used.
Our next step is going to be to get actual measurements that are bona fide so that we can see what's going all the way through town and not being used. And that would allow us to say, okay, at such and such an hour, this is what happens.
O'Meara says this could result in a unique way of managing intake.
It would be an automated headgate system that allows the headgate and the diversion to move up and down according to the demand of the ditch and how much they need to have at the time.
These upgrades are expensive, and American Rivers is helping the town find funding. O'Meara says that balancing human and ecological water needs is complicated.
When people see that there's no water in the river, a lot of times they say, well, the town's the last ditch, so they're pulling all the water out. We've got a job to do. We've got water rights that we need to protect, and we've got people that we need to serve with those water rights.
For KDNK, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
You can join the Roaring Fork Conservancy's bike tour of the town's ditches today at 4:30. More info at roaringfork.org. For KDNK News, I'm Gavin Dahl.
Childhood poverty has decreased significantly in Colorado since its peak in 2011. Eric Galatis reports.
Childhood poverty has decreased significantly in Colorado since its peak in 2011, according to new data from the Annie E. Casey Foundation. After the 2008 financial crisis, the poverty rate in Colorado grew to 18%, or nearly one in five kids. But since then, the rate has come down to 15%, one of the biggest drops in the country. Sarah Hughes with the Colorado Children's Campaign says the state is making progress, but many families haven't recovered from the Great Recession, and some 180,000 kids are still living in poverty.
But we still have many communities in our state, primarily in rural areas, where they're still waiting to feel the effects of the economic growth that's happening in some other areas of Colorado.
Nationally, the child poverty rate also decreased from its peak of 23% in 2011 to 21% in 2015. Although rates dropped among all children, African American and Latino children are still three times more likely to live in poverty. Hughes says children pay a price when all people aren't afforded equal opportunities.
And those disparities are largely due to the fact that we as a society have not always done the best job at ensuring that people of color have the same opportunities and the same chances for success as their white peers.
Laura Speer with the Casey Foundation says poverty in the U.S. means an annual income of about $24,000 for a family of four. She says it's a very low bar and not a lot of money to get by.
Families are making really difficult choices on what bills to pay. Most of these families are working. They have jobs that are not paying well enough to support the family on the whole.
For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
Tonight, Colorado Wild Public Lands, the Roaring Fork Conservancy, and Wilderness Workshop invite you to attend a candidate forum about public lands in Carbondale at the 3rd Street Center. The event starts with a reception of 5:45. 13 total candidates are expected to speak between 6:30 and 8. Confirmed speakers include Gail Schwartz, running for the U.S. Congress, Emily Tracy, Bob Rankin, Diane Mitch Bush, and Millie Hamner, running for the Colorado General Assembly, plus Garfield, Pitkin, and Eagle County Commissioner candidates. Congressman Scott Tipton and State Senator Randy Baumgartner have declined to participate in the public lands conversation.